My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Does porn have a place in modern society? Does it degrade, or is there such a thing as ethical pornography? Our reporter JJ Clark asked these people in Dublin, does porn have an acceptable place in the 21st century?
It belongs to modern society because there are fantasies that can be fulfilled through porn that can't be fulfilled in real life. And so it's good for people to be able to watch them, I guess.
I would say no.
Why not?
Why do you need it? Like, do you know? I suppose if you're single.
From my point of view, yes.
I guess it depends how it's made, because there is a lot of exploitation in the porn industry. So I guess if the people in it are fully consenting, then I think I don't see a problem with it at all.
Yes.
Why?
Well, because that's a normal thing to watch, in my opinion.
I mean, it shouldn't, I guess.
Yes, although quite unrealistic, I think it has its place.
I believe that it does belong in modern society, but I don't think it's a good thing for your mental aspect.
I think there's more negatives in it than like positives.
I think it can give a false illusion to some people of how sex is supposed to be.
Is it degrading to the parties involved?
I think as a whole, I think it is degrading, but I think that a lot of people watch it, so therefore there's a necessity for some people.
It depends, because some actors like doing it, but also it's degrading. I think it's degrading because imagine one day you don't want to work. You have to work. You have to have sex.
I think there's nothing degrading about having full autonomy of your own body.
100%. And they should be aware of that when they're in their profession.
I think it does, because truly, obviously, sex is something related to love if you're with your partner.
Yeah, I think people don't look at them as like humans, and when they'd be watching that video, I don't think you look at them as like a normal human being.
I think it depends on the porn, right? There's a way to be like feminist about porn. There's a way to be like inclusive about porn.
I also think it depends on pay. I think that sex workers deserve to be paid, and if it's some sort of like unfair work situation, then that's absolutely degrading.
And finally, do you watch it yourself?
I do.
How often?
I don't have a schedule or anything. It is whenever I think to, I guess.
Regularly, I would say, yeah.
I do, but I try not to.
Yes. On and off.
You.
No.
Don't eat.
No.
No.
For me? Yeah. Yeah.
I used to, not anymore.
No, I don't know. I've seen a few things when I was a bit younger, but no, I don't watch it now. I have, but it's not something that I would watch continuously like some people.
Our reporter JJ Clark talking to people in Dublin, remarkably outspoken people when he approached them. I'm joined by Dr. Cliona Sadler, Executive Director of Rape Crisis Network Ireland, and Jenny Keane, who's a holistic sex educator. Good morning and welcome to you both. Jenny, I'll start with you. Divided views there, you know, people thinking it's exploitative, other people saying there is a place for it. You've got power of autonomy over your own body, why not? What is your take on this?
I think what the issue is, right, is that unlike what is reported in the media, there isn't really a very simple or easy
answer to this. It's not black and white where it's porn is good and porn is bad. It's very much dependent on what type of porn people are watching and the context in which they're watching it. So who is watching it? You know, what is their underlying like psychopathology and how is that affecting their lives? How often are they watching it? Is it affecting their relationships in a way that's detrimental or even harmful to themselves or to other people? And then also looking at the other side, like there are studies that claim this, you know, that claim that porn is detrimental and harmful, where it does give people a very unrealistic idea about what sex is, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, how the human body functions, and it doesn't provide a healthy model for consent. But there are also other studies on the flip side of that to say that porn is very beneficial in some ways, that in ways that it allows certain people and certain communities, particularly in the LGBTQ communities, to explore their sexuality and identities in a way that, you know, allows them to understand what they like and what they look like without actually, from a safe point of view, is safety, right? And I think that really depends on what type of porn they're looking at, right? And also how that porn, how they're engaging with that porn. I think ultimately, if we're talking about mainstream internet pornography, right? It's not created to lay out a template for how you could engage with your partner. It's really created for adult entertainment, and it's definitely not created for educational material. There is now, as we're kind of, you know, moving on in modern society, a lot more resources for porn and ways to engage with porn consciously. So this would be looking at, I suppose, like the new wave ethical, sex positive, consensual porn that has a focus on women's pleasure. And in its own way, very powerfully celebrates sex in a very raw, real, natural state, where it can, you know, has this, it's almost a very deliberate attempt to show the good stuff that we love about sex: intimacy, laughter, the messiness, the realness, connection, real pleasure, how long it might take a woman to orgasm if she orgasms at all, and also is a way of exploring and enhancing fantasy. So I think it depends on what it is what type of porn you're actually engaging with.
Okay, how do people know whether the porn they're watching is ethical or not? The sex workers are being paid, whether they're being exploited, whether they've got a drug addiction and that's why they're doing it. How do they know all that?
So there's actually very specific, so again, that's a nuanced question, but there are very specific sites that are now dedicated to ethical porn. There's one, I don't know if I'm allowed to speak them out on the radio.
Well, don't give the address of the web,
no.
Please. Well, but you can just speak generally about the availability of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, so the ones that are subscription based are generally crowdsourced erotic indie films that are created, and they're based on very real life stories and sexual fantasies that are submitted anonymously. And there's also other ones that are, you know, audio based porn, for example, and they're very promotive of, as I said, women's focus on women's centered pleasure, which is really, you know, the difference between, I suppose, mainstream porn and then ethical porn would be that, you know, it's including a lot more different body types, right? It's including the idea that sex is going to be different, sounds different, looks different. And on the flip side, I suppose, on the flip side of that, the mainstream porn is very much, I mean, if you look at it, we don't have to look at porn to know, right, that mainstream porn that we're talking about isn't real life, right? Its purpose is that it's designed for quick pleasure. It's very much about exaggerated images, exaggerated angles, the drama. It's very cinematic on purpose because it's supposed to. The purpose is to bring you to arousal and climax quickly. So what we see in those type of porn environments would be very cartoonish, like, I suppose, caricatures of people, right? And there is an absolute difference. And I think, you know, the real crisis, I would say, for me, from my point of view, definitely isn't porn, actually, right? It's the fact that we're not providing comprehensive sex education early enough in school, right? So we aren't giving, for example, when teenagers are looking for ways to, you know, answer questions that they have about sex, they're turning to this mainstream, free, available porn, right?
Are you suggesting that the teachers should be showing ethical videos in the classroom so the kids
absolutely
don't turn
not.
to
Oh no, absolutely not. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Absolutely not. What I am suggesting is that we do need to provide people with comprehensive education. We need to provide people with the tools to understand how to become critical thinkers about the media, and that includes the porn that they ingest. Mm. We also need to, you know, give people the tools, you know, for understand relational, social, emotional education.
Point of view is that it has its place as long as it's properly used and is ethically produced. That's, what you would say is it's always going to be there. I mean, we know that, but this is the acceptable place it might have. Cliona, what do you say to that?
Well, I would agree with quite a lot of what Jenny has said, of course. But I think because there has been a search, if you like, for how we grapple with pornography in our society, and how we construct new types of pornographies that aren't just replete in misogyny, that aren't about men's violence against women, that aren't about sexualizing violence against women. And that's been, something of a search for the last 4 or 5 decades, and by many feminists. And I suppose when we look at it, you know, again, there's been an attempt to do exactly what Jenny has talked about there, about centering women, empowering women, you know, that there be consent within the all of the transactions, and they are transactions. Between those who are viewing and those who are creating the pornography. And there has been all those attempts, but as Jenny finished up there, we're not now in the space of mainstream pornography. If we have all of these caveats, if we're trying to do this with pornography, if you like, we're no longer actually talking about pornography. And as Jenny finished up, we're talking about sex education in schools. We're talking about being critical consumers of our cultures and our societies. What I would add to that is that we really have to be critical consumers of how misogyny is played out, and particularly played out in the sexualization of men's violence against women throughout our society, including and most especially in pornography. I think Jennifer herself walked out of, if you like, and explicitly moved away from pornography there, and moved into actually this is something about how we engage with our sexuality, how we're positive about our sexuality, how we engage with consent and empowerment and autonomy, and of course then how we engage around sex education and creating spaces for those who haven't had a space.
The argument that, you know, you can design pornography that is female-centered, is it a question that, you know, feminists who would want to have outlawed pornography have come round to a different point of view?
Well, I think there's been many attempts to do it, and of course, you know, there is, as Jenny describes, there's still sort of that attempt to find spaces and create spaces to do a feminist pornography. I think history tells us that every attempt has failed, and I would be cynical. But at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, give it a go. But what Jenny describes, you know, ends up being sounding like sex education in schools, not the production of pornography. So what I'm saying is, even those, once you pin down what it looks like to have consent and empowerment and autonomy, then you exclude yourself from the realm of pornography very quickly. So
you're saying once you get into, you know, nice, gentle erotica and all of that sort of stuff, you're no longer talking about the problem.
Well, essentially, yes. And as Jenny said, it isn't pornography anymore we're talking about. The pornography that is predominant, and the pornography that is part of the industry, the pornography that makes money, the pornography that can pay the people who are involved in it because it makes money, is pornography that is replete in violence against women and men's violence against women, predominantly. And it is one that we know the studies haven't just suggested, they've proven effects, negative effects on developing brains of young people. We know that young people are being exposed from 11.
We know more and more that young men are suffering untypically from erectile dysfunction maybe in their 20s because of overexposure to porn.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, what is heartening is that, you know, in the vox pop you did at the start of the program, is that there was a really quite a lot of sophistication in terms of what people were talking about, in terms of how they understood pornography, the pitfalls of pornography, the pros and cons of pornography. You know, there is a generation coming through that has that, you know, critical approach to pornography. They're not simply passive consumers. They're not simply being groomed by pornography. And in many ways, the sex positive movement is an attempt to move away from being groomed by pornography and the harms of pornography.
So to draw the threads together then, both yourself and Jenny would say it's got to start with education, education in understanding media, education in, you know, trying to explain what porn does to you and so on and so forth. But I suspect that the curiosity of the teenager will not be satisfied by, you know, some sex education lesson in school.
It absolutely will.
Yeah, Jenny?
Sorry, yeah, no, just to cut in, it absolutely will. I mean, children are wired to become very curious. And again, research shows definitely around the ages of 10, 11, 12 to become curious about sex. They have questions. I mean, if you've ever spoken to children, they're very engaged, like teenagers, they're very engaged with the conversation around sex and porn. And it doesn't come from you know, I think adults have a very interesting perspective about how children talk about porn. But if you actually speak to them and talk to them, they're already very critical thinkers, because that's where, and I think it's about how do adults serve them to becoming more critical thinkers? How can adults create a space where it's actually safe and non-judgmental for them to express and to ask any question that they want, where there's no right or wrong question? And so what you allow them to do is really to explore and get closer to the questions that they have. You know, I think that's really important. Right. You know, I think what's really important for people to understand is that it's part of their development to become curious. Sure. It's also part of their sexual development.
It is a difficulty. You know, many parents, they know their kids find the idea that their parents might be having sex at all abhorrent.
Absolutely. However, I'll say, you know, from my own personal experience, Pat, right, my parents were very sex positive and very open around the conversation around sex when I was a teenager. I had an identical twin sister. My sister engaged with that conversation with them all of the time and thought it was actually very funny to engage with them. I couldn't stand having the conversation with them. I became so embarrassed. I was awkward. I turned bright red. I would literally get up and leave the room. And my mother saw this in me and said, right, well, we still want you to be engaged in this conversation. So she took me to a bookshop and made me buy a book on sex education. They continued to have the conversation around me, even though it was uncomfortable for me to engage in. And even though I wasn't engaging with them in that conversation, I was engaging my peers, which is actually incredibly normal for that time in my sexual development. So it's really about how people are talking about sex around you is also having as much of an effect as someone talking directly to you, right? So it's, again, the environment that you're growing up in. And I would love to just say one more thing, Pat, because you did say this, and I would love just for the people listening to understand. You said that there is a growing an increase in erectile dysfunction because in males in their 20s, because they're watching porn or an excessive use of porn. This is absolutely not true. It's actually taken completely out of context in the time that we're in. I will say that there is an incredible, kids are underserved actually in understanding about erectile dysfunction, because if they are getting their education from mainstream porn, what they are viewing is that, you know, sex starts when the penis is hard and sex ends when the penis is no longer hard.
I have to, that's a different area, and I will have to go back and find the study which told me that particular element of things. But lots of comments coming in. I'll bring those to our listeners later on. But for the moment, Jenny Keane, holistic sex educator, Dr. Cliona Sadler, executive director of Rape Crisis Network Ireland. Thank you both.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.